Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and with me is Jazz, and also a guest sitting here with me today in our Sydney studio today, John Camino. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Great to be here. Hi, Jazz.
Jazz, I hope you're not feeling too disappointed today just because I've got a guest today with me. I mean, last time we had Andrew with you, so I felt a bit lonely in my Sydney studio. So I thought this time we'll turn the chair around a little bit. For our listeners, the reason that we're doing a Sydney episode today is we are going to be talking about Sydney market updates. And that's why I had John on the show. And John, could you just give us a bit of brief overview about what you do?
Sure. So I'm the owner and founder of a property buyers agency that operates exclusively in Sydney, and that their business is called Bridge to Bricks. And what we try to do is, you know, find those hidden treasures that aren't advertised on the internet. But I'm actually a chartered accountant, so I was actually a finance guy in a previous life, and I owned the buyers agency since the beginning of 2018.
That's a pretty decent switch, John. Just curious, from CA to buyers agency, how come?
I mean, I've been in real estate. My wife and I, between us, have been in real estate for 20 years as passive real estate investors. But we only sort of got active in the last, say, 5 years or so, really, really active. The switch from chartered accounting to real estate is not exactly a unique path. There are lots of guys who've done it. But I am fascinated in property and financial markets in general. I do observe, you know, pay a lot of attention to cycles and those sorts of things. And it's basically a numbers game with, you know, some bricks thrown in. And, it was a bit of a seamless transition. So becoming a real estate guy was actually following a passion, really. So it was really a passion play. But they're quite complementary, actually, because, you know, in accounting, if you're running a big company or a small company, you're looking at trying to find big stories and big themes. And I think that, you know, the good real estate investors are first and foremost macro guys. They're looking at the big trends. They're looking at interest rates. They're looking at demographics and infrastructure. And then within that, they pick deals and negotiate deals. But it's been fairly complementary, and it's been a great ride so far, so I'm loving it.
Tell us a little bit more about what's happening in the Sydney market, mate. Obviously, David and I, we are brokers, and we are in this space, and every day there's a news or something along the lines of the Sydney market is going to crash, it's going to go down by 40% or 30%, whatever the percentage is. You've been investing for the last 20 years. Give us a bit of your thoughts around what's happening in the Sydney market currently for the year 2019.
Yeah, look, I'll do a sweep around the markets. But first, yep. Actually, I'd like to tell you about two. I had two conversations yesterday. One was with a real estate agent in Lane Cove who said, he was sort of giving me an update of some recent sales, and he was sort of saying, if you purchased in 2016, you're still ahead in the unit market particularly. So if you bought in 2016, and Lane Cove got hit pretty hard, but you'd still be ahead. And I also spoke to a prospect looking in Bondi, and she was really disappointed that prices weren't as low as she was led to believe by the media. She was sort of saying, you know, I keep going to these auctions and trying to buy these properties. Yeah, and it's just not as bad as people say. So as with everything, how's the market? The market's patchy, the market is soft, and the market is down. But it's worse in some places and it's better in other places. So for example, the upper quartile of properties got hit first last year. So the first thing to say is it's, you know, here we are in sort of April 2019. It is not 2018, and 2018 was really bad. So it's not too bad this year. The upper quartile got hit first, and what we're seeing this year is kind of a bit of a flight back to quality. So if you look at the clearance rates, the North Shore in particular, but also the East and the City, performing really well. In fact, the lower North Shore has been around 80% for most of the year. It doesn't necessarily mean that prices are going up, but it means that buyer and seller expectations are pretty well aligned, and so things are selling.
So, John, when you say upper quartile, what sort of price range are you talking about here?
It's mainly properties over 4 million.
Over 4 million.
But it also means, generally speaking, detached houses. So the people who got, you know, hit the hardest last year were people who'd been land banking and bought large large blocks of land. Now, that doesn't mean the expensive areas were the worst hit, but upper quartile was the worst. So for example, last year, the worst part of Sydney was the northwest.
Yep.
And they're like...
The Canterbury Hills.
That's right, Rouse Hill.
The Rouse Hill.
Sorts of places. Mm. So if we take a swing through, I think the Lower North Shore is doing really well. If you wanted to get into the Lower North Shore, you should get your skates on. I'd say the Inner West, which got hit pretty hard last year, and the eastern suburbs are pretty flat, and that's pretty safe now. So that's pretty safe now.
So the eastern suburb has kind of hit a balance point where it's no longer dropping anymore, or because it's had already dropped to a certain percentage, and now it got to the balance point where the buyers now, the meeting sellers pricing point.
It's still soft.
It's still soft.
Okay. So I was at inspections recently in Paddington and Wallara, and I would go to one inspection, it would be packed, and the next inspection would be empty.
Depends.
So it depends what property you're going to see.
Okay.
And that's, I know that's kind of unsatisfying because you've got to put your finger on what makes them different. But it's quite patchy in that sense. But there's no blood on the street this year in that sense. I'd say where there's still distress is still the northwest, the west and the southwest as well.
Yep.
There's still a lot of pain there. If you're intending to buy there, you've got time to wait, I would suggest.
Or they can negotiate hard at this point.
That's right.
Or you
get a bargain. That's right. And look, I'm not big on either hot spotting or trying to pick the bottom of the market. I think that that's kind of a fool's errand that prevents you from taking action. And I guess the people that succeed and the people in real estate and the people that don't succeed, the difference is the people who pull the trigger, really.
That's true.
I'd say also the south, Blakehurst, Sanssouci, those sorts of areas are pretty flat as well. Pretty flat. But
what about Shire?
I don't do a lot in the Shire, but it's flat to
okay.
down. It's flat
okay.
to down. The other area that's kind of still oversupplied is that Bankstown area.
Oh yes.
So that would also be an area that's still
units.
Weakening.
That's still oversupply over there, is that
yeah,
right? Or houses?
That's right.
Units, yeah.
Well, houses are still going down as well because of affordability. So I know that's a bit of a mix, but the trouble with the is now a good time to buy question is because it is that if you've got a wealth strategy, unless you're Warren Buffett, you want to own real estate, right? And the way I look at things is you've got like 40 years of income to generate. And the longer you wait, the shorter that 40 years becomes. So for example, if you're a 30-year-old who wants to wait it out and say, well, I think there's 5 years more that the city market's going to grind down, well, you've just shortened your income earning life by 5 years and you've made yourself 5 years less attractive to the bank. It is now a good time to buy is actually a bit of a nuanced question in real estate. So in stocks where there's less leverage and you don't need to borrow and you don't need to pay it back, is now a good time to buy is a very good question because, you know, you can read the peaks and troughs and you can read the charts. In real estate, you've got a 30-year mortgage and the is now a good time to buy becomes less relevant because you only peak earning once in your life and you've just got to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
So now's a really good time to buy in Sydney. And the other thing I'd say about Sydney, I'm rambling now. The other thing I'd say about Sydney is that Sydney's about 14% off the peak.
As a one big market, I mean, we're talking
yeah.
about like in general, not talking about specifics.
Yeah, no,
of course,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's markets with markets if we do need to drill down. But okay.
But it took 1 year to drop 14%, whereas it took 5 years for Perth to drop about 14%.
Mm.
And so it's been a very sharp reset in that sense. And it's not because there's a recession, it's because there's been a change in lending standards. And so prices have reset very quickly to level out at the level in which credit becomes available again.
Yeah.
And so it's been very quick. That's the other thing to say about the Sydney correction.
Are you foreseeing another 6 months of sharp decline at this point in time?
I think in parts. I think in that northwest, you still got time.
Mm.
I don't think 2019 is the year when it shoots up. But I think 2019 is the year when parts of Sydney start to bottom. And bottoming is a process that takes, you know, 6 months to a year. But I would say if you wanted to get into the Lower North Shore, if you wanted to buy a unit there or a house, I think now's the right time. Likewise for most of the eastern suburbs and the inner west. What I see is that prices start to rise in 2020, perhaps the second half of that year, or perhaps earlier in the year. It's hard to know.
Wish we all have crystal balls.
Yes, but, exactly.
Unfortunately, we don't. So, you know, it's obviously based on what you can and what the data tells you, and, you know, over the time.
So if we were to crystal ball, I kind of buy into the John Lindemann.
Oh yeah, okay.
His thesis is that we are sleepwalking into a rent crisis. And he's sort of saying that, you know, the approval for new dwellings is down about 40%, and population growth is as high as it's ever been. So if you can imagine Australia as a country, we build 6 Darwins a year, we build 1 Canberra a year, and they're all moving into Sydney and Melbourne, broadly speaking, and Brisbane, of course. And so if we choke off credit and stop allowing people to build new dwellings or buy new dwellings, there's still demand for dwellings, they're just not buyers. And so John Lindemann's thesis is that we're sleepwalking into a rental crisis. And I don't know if I agree with the word crisis, but I certainly think that it's fair to say that rents are going to be the first sign, or the canary in the coal mine, the prices are about to jump.
A bit like Perth as well, because the rental vacancy in Perth, I know some areas have started to turn around now, and that's where people see as the first indication to say, hey, that's probably an actual turning point to see where some positive signs coming around.
Yeah, and the reason that you want to look at rents first is because rents are the most sensitive indicator to just the supply and demand of dwellings.
Yep.
When we look at buyers are the buying market is influenced by the supply and demand of dwelling and the supply and demand of credit. So so rental is a lot faster sense check of you know, if we're under or oversupplied.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Mm. So we're not undersupplied yet. But we're getting there.
We're getting there because we're not building new dwellings much more, whereas the population influx is still increasing at this point in time. So growth has remained the same, but the new dwelling approvals, obviously at this point, is slowly being consumed. So, okay, very good sum up. And, you know, certainly you can see where your economics background is coming from, the chartered accountant.
The peak of the release of new dwellings, particularly, units really, is 2019. And so while we've got really good population growth that can absorb that, there is no risk really of a shortage of dwellings this year.
Yeah.
That said, we absorb Sydney and Melbourne, but mainly Sydney, absorbs new supply very quickly. I don't know when the inflection point is, and all of this is subject to the new credit rules. So what we know for sure is that we will see yields rise in Sydney. But whether that kind of inflection point where it becomes more compelling to buy than to rent is, if that's 2020 or 2021, I'm not sure. But certainly I believe that 2019 represents the bottom for a couple of reasons. And one is that interest rates aren't going up. They may come down. And also because of this supply-demand problem that John Lindemann talks about, is not going to hit us this year, but it may well
coming
thereafter. So, I don't know, next year, the year after, something like that.
And obviously with the election happening this year, there's a lot of talk about negative gearing. Do you think that can make things a bit more worse than what it already is?
I've thought a lot about this. So firstly, I don't agree with the policy of removing it. And the reason I don't agree with it is, and I know that's not quite the question actually, but it's because, you know, it means property investors don't pay tax at their net taxable income. They pay tax at the gross taxable income. So I'm not really a fan of that, which means you're not paying at your marginal tax rates. But yes, I think it'll have an impact. So when there have been 3 times in post-war history where Sydney property prices have gone down by more than 10%.
Mm.
The first time was in the mid-80s when they withdrew negative gearing. The second time was 2008, and it took a couple of years to do that. And then the third time was now.
Mm-hmm.
So based on history, if it repeats or if it rhymes, you would expect property prices to go down if they withdraw negative gearing. The only problem with the thesis, though, is that interest rates are very low. And so your negative gearing benefit, if you want to call it that, is far lower in a low interest rate environment. I mean, you could remove negative gearing just by slashing interest rates, because
there's no benefit
that way. So I'm not sure that it'll have as big an impact, and plus we're already in a weak market. The other thing to say is that, I mean, do that many people really benefit from negative gearing? So if you say, well, negative gearing only benefits investors, and that's 30% of the market, and the people who are negatively geared within that 30% of investors is about, I think it's about 60%, 60% of investors. And the average amount of negative gearing is $1,600 for the year. So it's a very small amount, and it might affect the psychology of the market, but it actually will have a very small impact. Even if you don't overthink this, you want to be buying when no one's turning up to auctions, and you want to be buying when the headlines in the newspaper talk about how bad real estate is. So in general, I think Sydney is excellent buying right now. I think Melbourne dipped after Sydney, so I would not be surprised to see if there's a little bit more pain in Melbourne before it gets better there. But generally speaking, they're in a similar cycle, give or take 6 months.
Yeah, they follow about 6 months away, isn't it?
That's yeah.
Understanding.
Brisbane's interesting. I'll talk a little bit about why I chose to invest in Sydney, and partly because I'm a lazy investor and I'm boring, and I like to be able to drive to my properties and kick them. But also because I've got I did some charts on the Sydney to Brisbane price ratio.
Oh yeah.
And Sydney is always at about 1.8 or 1.9 times more expensive than Brisbane on average.
Okay.
And right now, if you do a chart of the Sydney to Brisbane ratio dating back to like 1971, you know, Sydney becomes overvalued versus undervalued, and they all take different turns to be expensive. Right now, Brisbane is actually slightly more expensive than Sydney. That doesn't mean that the trend is still for lower prices in Sydney and, say, less low prices in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. But historically, Sydney and Brisbane are about the ratio that they always are and that they always should be, with a slight advantage to Sydney being slightly cheaper. Now, that doesn't mean every property you buy in Sydney is going to be better than Brisbane and so on. And I know you get more yield in Brisbane. I think there's a lot of advantages in that because cash is king. But I'm not persuaded that Brisbane is a lot cheaper than Sydney, and Sydney is not historically expensive. Perth and Adelaide I don't spend a lot of time looking at, and I know Hobart has been the darling of the last 2 years, but it also has, I think, about 900 auctions a year, which is what Melbourne does in one week.
1 week.
So it's such an illiquid market that a couple of auctions change the dynamics in that market. So if we bring it back to Sydney, I think it's an excellent time to buy. And again, you know, you don't want to be too clever, because if you're trying to put a portfolio together, you're going to buy some cheaply and some expensively. And what I say to my clients is if we can emerge from this dip in Sydney with, instead of buying one property at the perfect price, you've bought three properties at good prices, you're winning, and you're going to be way ahead of the guy who bought at the perfect price. It also assumes that you know when that perfect price is and you don't. So if you can emerge out of this downturn in Sydney with a couple of properties at pretty good prices, it doesn't matter if you didn't get the bottom.
So I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, John. We know that the rent is going down at the moment because rent across the board is softening in Sydney, and price is also going down. So if I was an investor, why would I want to buy something that potentially still have more drop in terms of prices and also drop in my rental yield? What would you say to that?
Okay, so if we look at the annual figures, rents are down.
Yep.
Most of those declines were late last year in the fourth quarter, so rents have actually popped a bit in the first quarter.
Okay.
So rents actually were very, very healthy in Sydney in January and particularly February. So I'm not persuaded that there's a lot of downside left in rent.
Okay.
But the annual figures are a bit ugly.
Mm.
I think you want to get into property before it moves, not after. So you don't necessarily need the confirmation that rents are going up, because we know that they're not approving new dwellings. And I've mentioned Lane Cove before. Lane Cove, which was previously suffering from oversupply, is not approving any more dwellings. So you want to get in now before the rents move. And it takes some courage, I suppose, to not get that social confirmation that you buy a property and by the time you've settled, it's up 3 or 4%, which is what happens in a boom. So, you know, I think that it takes a little bit of, you know, originality and courage to say I'm buying because I know that I'm going to be winning in, say, 3 years or 5 years or 10 years. But you're not going to get the social confirmation you would get normally by buying and having it go up by the time of settlement. I think rents are flat as well, just to sort of circle back to that. The properties that I've seen, the rents aren't going up, and that's quite true.
Yes.
They're going down for off the plan, people who bought newer properties, so those rents are going
down. Definitely
steer
away from those.
Yeah. And I think the average, you know, if you've got a red brick walk up in a great suburb near a train station, you'll just renew at the same lease.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what's the buyer sentiment like at the moment? Are you getting much less buyers? Because the media every day is blowing the news of 40% drop.
That's a great question.
Buyer sentiment.
I think if I could answer that by saying who's buying at the moment, maybe that's the right way to answer it. So the main people buying are owner-occupiers, typically. And so within that, there's a big segment for first-time buyers. First-time buyers don't use a buyer's agent, I should say. So they're not coming to me, but first-home buyers are active. Downsizers are really active. So here we talk about the baby boomers again. So baby boomers are selling their large houses on the quarter-acre blocks and moving into very large apartments in good locations with no hills. So that's a really big... So if you're looking for a bargain for like a four-bedroom unit, you're just not going to find it because every baby boomer really wants that. And even three-bedroom units are doing really well because downsizers are moving into three-bedroom apartments. So when we say apartments are down, yeah, but not three-bedroom apartments and not four-bedroom apartments that are very rare. The other group of quasi-owner-occupiers that are coming to me, I'm getting a lot of inquiries and conversions with expats.
Okay.
So interestingly, we're seeing people who live overseas, they've got a lot of their wealth in company stock and they're very nervous about a frothy US stock market. And so they look at Sydney and our weaker dollar and the housing market's down and they're licking their chops saying it's relatively safe and relatively cheap to buy Sydney real estate compared to holding my Amazon stock or whatever it is. So I'm seeing a lot of that. So your average investor is not in the market, so I'm not getting a lot of that.
Yep.
But I'm getting very established real estate investors who don't need to borrow. And they're licking their chops at the current market as well. So it's everyone but mum and dad investors. They're not in the market, but a lot of downsizers and expats.
Actually, I do agree. Amazon stock is very interesting, but it's very expensive. I was thinking at some point, but as a buyer's agent, if you were to give some of these tips to the buyers who are actively looking in the market, what are the top three tips give us?
Is it top three tips for how to negotiate or how to pick a property?
Both of them.
All right, so let's assume we're talking about an investor. The top three tips would be to find a property with as much land value as possible. So that doesn't mean you need to buy a house, but you want to buy something that's low rise. That's really important. So in this downturn, we're seeing high-rise units go down and we're seeing the old ugly red brick pretty much hold its value, give or take, because you can upgrade them as well. So land value is the first thing. I guess the second thing would be to try to get your location right. So if you're an investor, you want to be... You want to think, I suppose, a bit like an owner-occupier. So you want to be near a train station. You want to have a reasonably flat walk to amenities. And when I say think like an owner-occupier, maybe a little bit like a baby boomer as well, because they've still got some coin. And I guess the third thing would be in the negotiation, don't obsess about winning. If you're putting a property portfolio together, it's okay to leave the negotiation with both parties feeling like they've won. So don't try to win at any cost, but walk away without a property. Because I think that there's a lot of obsession about being alpha when it comes to negotiating a property. So
create a win-win situation for both seller and buyer.
Yeah.
Come to a middle ground on some term.
There's no prize for not getting the property, you know, unless it's a complete dog, but get the property. Yeah. And I guess a bonus tip would be if you really want a bargain, you've got to find something that's slightly impaired. And that's a real opportunity for some savvy guys to problem solve, to find a creative solution to a problem. So not everything is on sale at the moment, but impaired properties, you know, main roads or bad layouts or something like that, they are definitely good buying at the moment. They're on sale. And the people who I see that I help that really buy well are people who buy a property with some problems and have a vision for how to improve those problems.
Solving.
That's how you pick a bargain, yeah.
And I think it circles back very good in terms of what Jazz and I have always been big advocates on in terms of adding value. It's essentially you're solving a problem. You can identify a problem with this property that you can fix, and you can therefore increase the value as such. And that's something that you want to look for in that. So, no, perfect example.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of we talked about impaired properties where the real opportunities are, but impaired properties are the properties that just aren't selling.
Yeah.
You know, fixer-uppers used to be very popular. Exactly. They're less popular now. So, you know, when we look at a clearance rate and we say, you know, 30% of the properties haven't sold, a lot of those properties have problems with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily about the vendor not getting their price, although that's a part of it. They're just impaired properties.
So they're the one that type, like, you know, on the main roads, you know, with structural issues, that kind of stuff, you know. Absolutely. Basically B grade. Well, I'm classified as like a B grade type of property rather than A grade, you know, in really good location, you know, in perfect kind of condition. So, okay.
That's right. You know, a block with a land shape like a pizza slice or something like that. So, yeah, we've taken the bath. That was 2018, and now it's about being selective.
Give us something here for the investors, your top three suburbs in Sydney to invest. Where you guys are heavy at this stage?
Okay, so again, not a hot spotter, but I'll give you, like, in the short term, you want to be looking at, I'd say, Surry Hills, which really didn't go down that much last year. I would say Lane Cove, because it dropped a lot last year, but it's also one set of lights into the city.
House or units?
Units, because we're not building them anymore. Yeah, or both, really, to be honest. and I would also say Cogra, which, you know, had a big run prior to the correction, but that's really good value as well. So that's right now. I mean, you know, what you want to really focus on is blue chip right now. So I've neglected some quality suburbs there. In the long term, you know, if you look at the long term in Sydney, there are kind of two main drivers that are going to drive value. And one is Badgerys Creek and the other one is the Sydney Metro. So if you want to be slightly braver and a little bit more speculative, which is not necessarily a good idea, but have a look at anything on the Sydney Metro line. So particularly now that Gladys won the election, they're going to build out to Bankstown. And so, you know, you look at your Marrickvilles, even out to, you know, Lakembas and so on. So that's...
suburb that's on this metro line, basically.
Yeah, and there's suburbs that now you can even get yield. You can still get, you know, if you buy a unit in Lakemba with three bedrooms, you can get, you know, nearly 5%. So so they're worth having a look at. You need to be a little bit braver, but they're definitely options. Sydney Metro and Badgerys Creek is a good option too. So one suburb that will benefit from both Badgerys Creek and the City Metro is Belmore, and that's a suburb that I like for the longer term, although I don't see it going up in the next year.
Thanks for sharing all that tips for our listeners, you know, including both the owner occupiers as well as investors for both. And I certainly appreciate you doing a lot of hard work. I mean, you know, not every day I get people walking in with piles of papers on the back on the research, and, you know, like it's all scribbled as well. So, you know, John came in very, very prepared, wanting to make sure they give as much value to our listeners as he possibly can. So appreciate that. And I know you spoke about, you actually recently acquired, was it last year or the year before, where you actually acquired a unit in Belmore or Lakemba?
No. We did buy a house in that area.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe next time we'll bring you back in and we can talk a little bit about that deal, why you chose it, you know, what's so good about it. So that'll also give our listeners some perspectives.
Pleasure. Yeah, look, it was great to be here, and thank you for having me. I'd love to, you know, come back one day.
Awesome.
Thanks for that, John. And any other wise words before you leave for our listeners?
I'd say that, like, now is such a superb time that that the spoils are going to go to those people who take action and make a courageous decision, and don't let this opportunity swing pass you by.
Don't let the negativity take over.
So basically ignore all the media BS, and there are some good opportunities out in the market and some of the good tips that have already been given to the listeners. Hope you guys are enjoying the content. If you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on the iTunes or whatever app you're using, and we will see you guys next time. Jazz and David, bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.